Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, April 23rd, 2022. Section A. Record-breaking month for real estate. By Stuart Doreen. March was a record-breaking month for the Midland County real estate market, according to the A&M Real Estate Center. The center reported that new high marks were set or tied for total dollar volume for homes sold and median price for a home sold. A&M also showed in its monthly report that records were just missed for homes sold in a month and average price. Dollar volume eclipsed $124 million for the first time since records have been kept. The $124.9 million beat the previous record established in June 2021. The total in March was a 37% increase over March 2021. The $325,000 for the median home sold tied the record from January and was a 10% increase from March 2021. The center also reported that March 2022 marked the 10th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. Home sales may be the category most reflective of what Midland real estate market is becoming. For the third straight month, a new mark for homes sold in a particular month was established. In fact, the March 2022 total was 28% higher than the 262 sold in March 2019. The A&M Center also reported that the number of homes sold in March was the second most since A&M started keeping records. Lastly, A&M showed the average home sold in March sold for an average of $373,000, which was a second highest mark trailing September 2021. It was also the 43rd straight month that the average price of a home sold topped $300,000. A&M Real Estate Center stats show the price of a home sold typically increases from February to March, and that was again the case this year as the average price jumped 12%. Realtors previously told the Reporter-Telegram that potential buyers are wanting to purchase because of the possibility that interest rates will continue to increase. They also said a lower inventory compared to 2021 is a factor in price increase. Oil gas industry captures photojournalists' curiosity. By J.C. Lewis. A photojournalist found his way to America's largest oil patch about 10 years ago through employment at the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A decade later, the millennial is known as the oil field photographer and has created a unique business servicing the needs of a historically secretive industry. James Durbin said his time in Midland has been an adventure, and he's built more than just a business here. I tell people that this is a job that found me. I thought of the name, I guess. I jumped on securing the name, but even at the time I did that, I wasn't ready to fully jump into the business on my own. It took a lot of effort to get where I can do it full time. His wife, Karina, has helped him make that jump and has been his biggest supporter along the way. She does a lot of family work and Airbnb work, so I can go out and be the oil field photographer. She keeps us fed and gets the kids to school and where they need to be while also doing three different part-time jobs. The Midland Entrepreneurial Challenge also helped him launch the business. The challenge is like going back to school, he said. There are all these assignments, but they are helping you create a business plan. I would not be here as the oil field photographer running and expanding the business without going through that process. Durbin graduated from the journalism program at Southern Illinois University. When he first moved to Midland in 2012, he moved in his car, bringing some cameras and clothes. He couldn't find a place to stay, so he was commuting from Garden City before he was able to sublease a room in a house. I think that situation was very common during that time. There weren't as many apartment buildings back then, so people were staying wherever they could. Before starting his own business, Durbin was a finalist for the Texas Press Association's prestigious Star Photojournalist of the Year Award. He also worked overseas in Africa and Haiti as a contractor. Still, the oil and gas industry was able to capture Durbin's curiosity. I was totally fascinated by the oil and gas infrastructure around. I felt like an outsider to it, but I was curious about it. The community I worked in felt a lot like a very small community in St. Louis. Midland felt very familiar to me. I think some people come here from, and they're looking to get out, and I never felt that way. At the same time, I didn't expect to be here as long as I have. Durbin said he came to Midland thinking he would work with the newspaper and found another photojournalist opportunity wherever it would take him. However, he found more than just a job and business in Midland. He found his future wife and son. He first met his wife through his social channels and parties. They started taking a romantic interest in each other at the Schlumberger Christmas party at the Horseshoe Arena. Coincidentally, neither of them worked for Schlumberger, but had friends who invited them to the event. Durbin added he's thankful he met Karina before dating apps became the predominant way to meet people. Karina was born and raised in Midland. Her family has always worked in the oil and gas industry. I guess we met the old-fashioned way at a party, he said. That was the way things were done, or I guess you could have met somebody at church. Karina and James had their wedding in 2017. He said they took things slowly. He said they had a great time dating in Midland between music concerts and festivals like Crudefest and other events. They got to experience all this oil field culture. Karina had a son, Isaiah, who was 3 years old when I first met them. Once we decided to be serious, it was always on my mind being able to adopt him. I wanted both of them in my life. The couple needed to get married in order for Durbin to adopt Isaiah, so they ended up going to the courthouse to get married before their wedding. However, they tried to keep their marriage in 2016 a secret because they still wanted to have a wedding. A funny story about my bosses at the newspaper found out I was actually married before our wedding was that one time I needed to take a sick day because Isaiah had broken his arm rollerblading. We needed to take him to Lubbock for his final cast. I approached my bosses to tell them I needed a sick day for Isaiah, but they said technically I couldn't take a sick day since Isaiah wasn't my immediate family at the time. So I ended up telling them, actually, I got married and adopted Isaiah before the wedding. In the end, I got to use the sick day. The Durbins welcomed their daughter, Myla Grace, to the family in 2019. Despite their growing family, the duo has continued their hard work ethic. We both come from families who had businesses of their own, and we brought that hard work ethic into our own business, Karina said. I've always just worked so hard. Ever since we got married, it's been one thing after the other. We haven't really slowed down. Karina added that it hasn't always been easy. The couple has worked opposite schedules, which made it hard to see each other. But in this new season of life, things have gotten a little easier. It's easier to sacrifice that time for him to go work now, knowing that we're growing something together. We have the same morals and ideas mostly. We are different people. Still, he is very quick to act when I say we need to take things more slowly. Karina added that it's been amazing how Midlanders have embraced her and her family. She said James knows a lot of people in the community, and they've all embraced her as she helped him achieve his dreams. Midland has continued to change over the years, Durbin said. Back then, there weren't many businesses, restaurants, or apartment buildings. We'd go out to, like, rockin' rodeo, and people would be spending money like crazy. As someone who wasn't directly connected to the oil field, I'd be like, what is going on here? He remembers the first time he went out to a drilling rig to photograph for the newspaper, and he had no clue what he was looking at. It was like this whole world of new stuff. I felt this constant interest, but not enough to go to work in oil and gas, but coming from an area where it all happened. All I knew about gas was that I would put it in my car at the pump, but I wouldn't think about it again until I had to fill up. 2019 was the year he phased out of the newspaper and started working for himself full-time. The business focuses on the commercial photo and video, event coverage, headshots, rental surveillance and time-lapse, inventory and asset management. Check out more at theoilfieldphotographer.com. On top of the oil field photography, Durbin also has a sports photography business and a studio specializing in graduate photos and headshots. the best pictures come from the best access, he said. If you don't have good access, then you're not going to get a good picture. That's where journalism really helped me become the photographer and businessman that I am, because it had always, to me, about earning trust, whether it's from the reader and the subject or the customer. Emily Lester, marketing and brand manager at Petro Services, can attest to Durbin's ability with the camera. She said Petro has been hiring Durbin for a couple of years to photograph and do video work. We're looking for an experienced photographer specific to the oil and gas industry. It's tricky to find someone with the right certifications to go on a well site and do creative work. Lester added that he has a documentary style that takes the oil and gas industry to the next level, being able to make real life images of the oil field. It's a level of expertise that he has built for himself over time. He works with so many different companies in the oil and gas industry. He's familiar enough with the industry to protect each of his clients. Once you're a client of James, he's always looking out for your business. He's extremely busy, yet he always makes time for whichever client is in front of him. Crude natural gas prices navigate week of choppy waters. It was choppy waters for both crude and natural gas as growing concerns over demand sent prices falling from recent highs. West Texas Intermediate declined for the last 4 weeks, hit by an unexpected drop in fuel consumption in China as that country locks down millions amid a COVID outbreak. More aggressive tightening of monetary policy is expected by the Federal Reserve as it battles inflation rates at 40-year high. WTI rose 3 of 5 trading days in the week, the last being before Good Friday, and down from 108 at Monday's close. The posted price closed at $98.55, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices, which rose to levels not seen since 2008, briefly crossed the $8 per MCF Monday, then reported steep drops the rest of the week. With the world coming out of the bleak of COVID and everyone ready to get back to work and to travel, demand far outstrips supply. He offered a criticism of the Biden administration, saying its tenure has been marked by increased hostility from oil and gas adversaries who continue to insist that the world transition away from hydrocarbons immediately, while on the other hand complaining about why the industry refuses to ramp up production more rapidly to ease the record high inflation we all face. Shepard noted that Permian Basin production is at a record high and continues to increase even though the industry remains cautious about historically bad times and record low prices during the pandemic. It's encouraging to see drilling permit applications on the rise. This is an encouraging sign that the Permian is getting back to business. However, we're still hamstrung by supply shortages in everything from labor to tubing to propellants. He then concluded the Permian Basin will continue to increase production, although not fast enough for some people. Some of the very people who want us to never drill another well are complaining we aren't drilling fast enough. I'm a little confused. Craig Earlham, senior market analyst, said that oil remains choppy with China and the Federal Reserve creating a bit more of a two-way price action amid very tight markets. The risks are certainly more tilted to the upside given the war in Ukraine and a potential embargo on Russian exports. But lockdowns in China and the risk of a Fed-driven economic slowdown are also significant. Fiona Cincotta told Bloomberg, "We're in this middle ground area where we're waiting to see whether the European Union will ban Russian oil. That's the one event that will change the course of oil prices considerably."
This is Mackie, and I'll be reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on Saturday, April 23, 2022. Rigs hold steady in Permian and Texas by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity held steady across the country as drillers are likely waiting for volatile commodity prices to calm before putting more rigs to work. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count, which it has put out weekly since the 1940s, rose by 2 to 695, marking the fifth consecutively weak increase for the tally. The count is also 257 rigs higher than the 438 reported last April. The number of rigs drilling for oil inched up one rig to 549, 206 more than the 343 seeking crude last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also rose by one to 144, a number just reached in October 2019, and 50 more than the 94 at work a year ago. There was little change in drilling activity among the nation's producing states. Texas was unchanged at 346 rigs, 135 more than 211 last year. And New Mexico was also unchanged at 95 rigs. Alaska, 1, and North Dakota, 2, were the only states to see increases, while Wyoming, 1, was the only state to see a decline. Like Texas, the Permian Basin was unchanged from the previous week at 334 rigs, 108 more than the 226 reported the previous April. Lee County, New Mexico, continues to be the most active county in the Permian with 50 rigs, unchanged from the previous week. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained in second place with 41 rigs, also unchanged for the week. Midland County added one rig for 40 at work within county lines. Reeves County added two rigs, the most of any Permian Basin county, for 32 rigs. Martin County was close behind with 31 rigs unchanged for the week. Loving County fell by one rig to 28, and Howard County held at 22 rigs for a third week. Upton County reported 18 rigs for a second week.
Big Brothers, Big Sisters honors volunteers. In conjunction with National Volunteer Month, Big Brothers, Big Sisters held its Volunteer Appreciation Dinner on Thursday at the Green Tree Country Club. All volunteers for the organization were invited, with 10 receiving specific honors for their service. In addition, the organization recognized two community partnerships. Andrew Davis was chosen as the 2022 Community-Based Big Brother of the Year. Davis has been matched with his little brother, Cameron, for 2 years in the Odessa program. The match began in the school-based program, which meets during the school day at the child's school. Davis was honored for his dedication in adapting it in order to continue the match when schools closed due to COVID. The 2022 Community-Based Big Sister of the Year is Brittany Watson. Over the past 4 years, matched with her little sister, Watson has helped her become more outgoing through activities such as interacting with farm animals and helping with her homework. Watson has also encouraged other volunteers matched with quiet little brothers or little sisters. Jim and Shauna Trella were honored as the 2022 Couples Match of the Year. They've been matched with their little brother for almost 2 years, helping him overcome family issues he was struggling with. The Trellas adopted a daughter while matched, but made it a priority to include their little brother in discussions of the process, reassuring him that they plan to maintain their relationship. Their little brother is doing well in school and has overcome the family issues he faced in the beginning. The 2022 High School Big of the Year is Brett Campagna. Campagna was matched with his little brother in September 2020. Although the match has been virtual, meeting weekly via Zoom, Campagna has been committed to encouraging his little brother about school and special school projects while fitting in a little fun with Fortnite, the game of life, and among others. Campagna has helped to educate his little brother making good choices, while his little brother educated Campagna on video games. Kathleen Cheney and her little sister Rosie were honored as the 20 Match of the Year. Rosie said she can be herself with Cheney and that her big sister represents, respects, and values her feelings and thoughts. Matched for more than 5 years in the program, they have found they have a great deal in common, including their love for arts and crafts. Recognized for her encouragement and support of her little sister, Natalie Connor is this year's school-based Big of the Year. She and her little sister have been matched with 4 years, seeing each other weekly to play with Play-Doh, color, or do origami. They also practice reading. Connor rates her match with her little sister as a 10. Also recognized were board members Shelley Young and David Hands. Both have been longtime board members for Big Brothers Big Sisters and have served in leadership roles, helping the organization to adapt through COVID and to introduce new initiatives during that time to ensure that the children in the program achieved the vision of reaching their full potential. Both are also big brothers and sisters in the program and have been for many years. Adrian Vega was named Odessa Committee Member of the Year. Vega has been a big brother for several years, beginning with the school-based program and then moving to community-based when schools closed during COVID. He serves on the committee to oversee the program and has helped promote the organization by promoting his match in the various media. The final two awards presented at the dinner were to recognize the importance of community partnerships. Teresa and Paul Kane with Kane Insurance Solutions and InWest Retirement Solutions were honored for their decades of financial and program support for this program. They attend fundraisers, encourage staff to volunteer, and also donate a large number of Rockhound tickets annually so that matches can enjoy a game at the ballpark. The Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin were honored for the willingness to partner with a fellow nonprofit to improve the lives of children in the Permian Basin. High school and college students can meet with a little brother or sister after school at one of the area clubs in Midland and Odessa. The child receives a mentor and positive voice, while the older students can earn community service hours and develop leadership skills. Also recognized were special guests Lawrence Cheeks, counselor of De Zavala, and April Madrid and Elizabeth Curtis, counselors at Yarborough. Big Brothers Big Sisters has provided mentors for children in Midland County since 1975 and in Ector County since 2017. For more information about enrolling a child or volunteering as a mentor, call 687-0915. Join the Lions for the breakfast, dancing, mascots, and more at the mall. When is the last time you ate eggs and potatoes next to a lion? For some Midlanders, that's been every spring for 29 years as the Midland Northside Lions Club celebrates serving the community with We Serve Breakfast, formerly the Bunny Breakfast. Do you remember the breakfast in the past years full of dancing with the Hispanic Culture Center's performers in colorful dresses and little mariachi outfits? How about the larger-than-life mascots that the six-foot-tall cowboy armadillo, but rockhound, and lion that your children and grandchildren enjoyed seeing in person and tugging at their tails to see if they're real? Let's not forget about the more than 20 door prizes, a DJ, and our own lion who will be playing a guitar, thanks to Dr. McGuire. There have been so many memories of family, friends, and Lions getting together in the food court at Midland Park Mall that we are blessed to have an opportunity to make those memories again this year. We ask you and your family to join us for a meal fit for some Lions to serve. That's what Lions do best, after all. We serve our community, and by serving, we understand the importance of bringing us all together. Whether you'd like to dine with us at the mall or take a meal to go for $6 a plate at the Midland Northside Lions Club, invite you to help us with our fundraiser for a nonprofit organization. The proceeds are used to fund scholarships at Midland College, contribute money, and send kids from Midland to the Texas Lions Club for handicapped children in Kerrville, sponsor local students to be hosted in Europe, as well as host foreign students in Midland. Our club proudly sponsored the Lion Water Fountain at Chris Davison Opportunity Park and many other community service projects, such as vision screening for children, which we will have on site this year. There are also more than 20 local charities that benefit from the funds we raise. Our last highlight is the Lions International Peace Poster Contest that we sponsor every year with students from Goddard, Bowie, Trinity, St. Anne's, and the first time this year at Bynum School. This year, the theme was We Are All Connected, and the students painted posters ranging from peace signs, healthcare workers, a dove, hands united, and a variety of tranquil scenes of nature. On April 30th, from 7 to 10 a.m., the food court helped us paint a picture of our community enjoying not only bellies full of food and laughter, but smiles and memories that show how we in Midland are all connected. Alfredo Oyarvides passed away on April 20th. A memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Monday, April 25th at La Nueva Jerusalem Church in Andrews. Family and friends will gather for viewing and visitation Sunday, April 24th from 3 to 9 p.m. at La Nueva Jerusalem Church in Andrews. Arrangements are under the direction of McNett Funeral Home. Nita McMinn Helmer passed away on February 22nd. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 30th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Burial services will be at Arlington National Cemetery in the crypt of her late husband. The family will accompany their mother and grandmother to be interred at Arlington National Cemetery, Washington, D.C. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Armando Huerta passed away on February 19th. Funeral, followed by burial, will be held on February 23rd at 10 a.m. at AH Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of American Heritage Funeral Home. Earl Rodman passed away on March 26th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, April 29th at the First Baptist Church in Odessa. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Encarnacion Chon F. Vasquez passed away on April 19th. Viewing will be Monday, April 25th from 11 to 9 p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, April 26th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Arrangements are made under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Jesus H. Munguia Mingua of Midland passed away on Monday, April 18th. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, April 25th at St. Anne's Church at 1:30 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Lawrence Dale Dancer passed away on February 19th. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American, published Saturday, April 23rd, 2022. Front page. Basin Sports Complex set to reopen. The grand reopening of the Basin Sports Complex is set for 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. April 30th. Among many other things, the event will include a bounce house, a car show, face painting, food trucks, kids' train rides, a kite festival, softball scrimmage, tattoo airbrush, battle in the basin football, flag football tournament, softball scrimmages, and more. Director of Athletics Todd Dooley said the fields, which cover 93 acres, are owned by UTPB. They are open for rental and usage. There are 14 diamonds of varying dimensions, basketball and tennis courts, pavilions and soccer fields, among other features. I'm ready to have this thing launched and really open it up and let the community see it open back up. I think people who have been using it are recognizing that we've made a significant investment in the facility itself from the standpoint of we've done right around $100,000 worth of dirt work out there where we've replaced the dirt in the infield overseeding. We've spent over $50,000 on fencing and gates, any number of things that needed attention. Restrooms, the concession stands are on the list of things we need to get done and improved and make sure that they're up to code and all those things, Dooley said. The fields are currently being used for girls softball, a flag football tournament on April 30th, and a flag football league that will start in May. We've got some slow pitch softball, some adult softball, a league that will start up, and then we're getting some use on some rentable space for soccer teams and those kinds of things. So we're wide open, Dooley said. Baseball practice is taking place on the fields, but nobody has contacted UTPB about a league. Typically, he said, Little League baseball is associated with neighborhoods. One of the things that we're working on is trying to find a baseball tournament to host this summer. Midland has one, and they had to turn some teams away last year. And so in an effort to expand that tournament, we've offered the facility as an option to grow that tournament field, Dooley said. Possibilities also include ultimate frisbee and a kickball tournament. Sports Facilities Management, which is managing the fields, has been doing the lion's share of the work, Dooley said. He added that the company's CEO will be in town for the grand reopening. We're excited to get it going, We had to shut it down for the entire month of March to do the work that needed to be done to get it ready to open it back up, Dooley said. It reopened in early April. The website is playthebasin.com, and there is a Facebook page for the Basin Sports Complex. People can go on and enter their information, write in their request and the dates, and the company will be in touch. One of the things that we found that was a little unexpected, but really good, is that there are pavilions out there. I think there are 4 pavilions out there, and you can reserve those, Dooley said. There is a drop-down box on the side where you can schedule a pavilion. On Easter, he said, the pavilions were booked all day. It's good to see those being used, Dooley said. The online system is going to streamline the process of booking fields. It costs $25 an hour to rent a field if you don't need lights. If you need lights, it's $50 an hour, and there are lights in the pavilions and the common areas. The priority was getting the fields playable and safe initially. Early on, we're going to utilize food trucks, and then as we round out the concession stands and offer those options, they'll be coming online. But the amount of expense to get them where they need to be this early is just not doable. So food trucks serve as a stopgap, he said. But they will have reverse osmosis systems and ice machines. Dooley said they also have to make sure the electricity and water are up to code because they have to get health and safety inspection if they're going to do hot food preparation. They will spruce up the buildings and added fencing and gates. Eventually, along with the concession stands, there will be other vendors, and they would like to offer screen-printed T-shirts. We want it to be a full one-stop shop option for people, Dooley said. He said he thinks April 30th will be a great day for UTPB. It's more of a celebration of here we are. We're excited to get going and let the community know that we're open for business, he added. Odessa YMCA partners with Superior Health Plan for Hygiene Closet by Royal McGregor. On Friday morning, the Odessa Family YMCA held a ribbon-cutting ceremony for its Hygiene Closet that will be open and free to the public in 2 weeks. The Hygiene Closet, which features paper towels, toilet paper, cleaning supplies, feminine products, diapers, shampoo, and conditioner, will be open from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. the first Friday of every month until the end of the year. The Odessa Family YMCA will open its Hygiene Closet to the public for the first time on May 6th. Chrissy Medina, the CEO of the Odessa Family YMCA, said she's excited to bring a free Hygiene Closet to the community. There aren't any Hygiene Closets that I know of in Odessa, so we're very excited about the opportunity to collaborate with Superior Health Plan on a project like this, Medina said. Oftentimes, I feel like hygiene maybe gets missed sometimes. For us to be able to have that access for free to families who need it was very important and part of our mission and focus at the YMCA. Though the Hygiene Closet will primarily be open the first Friday of every month, Community Relations Director Desiree Brito said the Hygiene Closet will open for emergencies. If there is an emergency or there is a family in need, they can call up here to the YMCA and we can open it and get them the products that they need, Brito said. Medina said Superior Health Plan approached the Odessa Family YMCA about a Hygiene Closet, as Medina said she believed there was a need in the community. The Hygiene Closet is located near the main entrance of the Odessa YMCA. I wanted it to be a little bit homey, Medina said about the Hygiene Closet. I wanted it to be a little inspirational. I can't imagine what it's like to not have access to very important items. I wanted it to be something that they would be looking forward to coming into and not be embarrassed or ashamed to say that they need help. That was very important. As far as the expected reception to the Hygiene Closet, Brito said it might take some time for it to catch on, as community members might not know about it right away. Brito said it will be important for the Odessa Family YMCA to get in contact with local churches and nonprofits. Brito echoed Medina's sentiment that no one should feel embarrassed or ashamed for seeking out the Hygiene Closet. For as long as I've worked here, My slogan has always been, we are more than just a gym. We're family, Brito said. Every person that walks through the door is treated like they are walking into my house. They're going to feel welcome. They're going to feel loved. They're going to feel seen. I would encourage people who do feel intimidated or embarrassed to not feel that way. You're just coming into your family's house, and we are lending a hand. Opportunity Odessa says yes to ECISD bond propositions A and B. In 2020, Opportunity Odessa facilitated a community survey in English and Spanish, which resulted in more than 4,100 respondents prioritizing what they saw as the most critical areas of need in Odessa and Ector County, a press release stated. These areas of need were divided into 12 categories, with support for ECISD being the top spot as deemed by respondents. The next four categories of need, in order of importance, were invest in infrastructure, improve public safety, invest in amenities, and capture state and federal funding opportunities. With the number one need overwhelmingly showing up as education, support ECISD, Opportunity Odessa proudly endorses the passage of the ECISD Bond A and B propositions. Our community can't grow and certainly can't thrive without more space and better facilities for our students, David Bounton, member of the Opportunity Odessa Executive Committee and a Grow Odessa past chairman, stated in the press release. We're decades behind in building a new high school. Our growth over the past decade has been record-setting, and the next 3 to 10 years will make the last decade look like we were moving in slow motion. No doubt, now is the time to say yes to a bright future for our students and this community. The Odessa survey results showed that people understand the need for the best public education system possible. It starts with voters willing to invest in improvements through the passage of this bond. Election day is May 7th, with early voting starting on April 25th. Opportunity Odessa is comprised of non-governmental, non-partisan community leaders from various business sectors throughout Odessa and Ector County, the press release detailed. The organization was formed in 2019 with the mission of establishing an inclusive and community-driven long-term vision for Odessa and advocating for that vision. The efforts have been underwritten by Grow Odessa, a private nonprofit, nonpartisan economic development organization that was started in the 1960s. Abbots invite Texans to participate in Blue Sunday. Governor Greg Abbott and Texas First Lady Cecilia Abbott announced via press release on Friday that they are encouraging Texans to participate in the Blue Sunday Day of Prayer as part of the Child Abuse Prevention Month. Blue Sunday is a day where communities all across the nation are encouraged to join together, wear blue, and take time during their worship service to pray for the victims of child abuse and those that rescue them, the press release stated. Additionally, the Texas Governor's Mansion will be lit blue on Sunday in recognition of Blue Sunday and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Nothing is more important than the safety and security of Texas children, and we will never waver in our efforts to eradicate child abuse in the Lone Star State, Governor Abbott stated in the press release. As a symbol of our commitment, I am proud to light the Governor's Mansion blue this Sunday, April 24th, to recognize the victims of child abuse and those that support and rescue victims. Cecilia and I also invite Texans across the state to join us for a time of prayer and to wear blue on Sunday to spread awareness and show solidarity with victims and their advocates alike. I hope you will join Greg and me in praying for the children who are victims of abuse and also in praying that there will be one day, a day that no children who fall victim to abuse, First Lady Abbott stated in the press release. Thank you to the advocates, caseworkers, law enforcement, and other stakeholders who work tirelessly to rescue children from abuse and ensure brighter futures for these vulnerable victims. Earlier this month, Governor Abbott issued a proclamation naming April 2022 as Child Abuse Prevention Month in Texas. STEM Partnership Kicks In This Summer by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy and Ector County ISD will officially partner starting July 1st. The performance agreement between the two entities was approved by the ECISD Board of Trustees in March. STEM will become a part of ECISD but maintain its charter independence. A STEM task force of parents, teachers, and university leaders was formed about 3 years ago to identify viable options that address the goals of maintaining the STEM academic model, maintaining access for teachers, staff, and students, and providing a pathway for permanent facilities to meet the long-term needs of the school. The task force worked for about 2 years. Shannon Davidson, superintendent of STEM Academy, who will become executive director when the agreement begins, said, "For the most part, the school day will feel much the same as it is now. We worked very hard to keep our teachers on board. We worked hard to keep our students rolled over and continue on with us. So for the most part, everything will feel very much like it does now. The only change for our students, really, is some more opportunities for them. They will have food services, so we will have breakfast and lunch for our students next year, which is a big change. The kids have been bringing sack lunches for the last 8 years, so I think they're excited about that," Davidson said. "We'll have some transportation with ECISD, so that will be exciting. Then, also, we're working with ECISD on fine arts and athletics for our kids in secondary, so middle school and high school," she added. Davidson said they will start with individual sports like tennis, track, cross country, swimming, and golf. "We're looking to align it to our schedule the best we can for students to either take those sports and fine arts first thing in the morning or at the very end of the day," Davidson said. "They'll go home, they'll go to their home campus if they aren't coming to STEM. They would go to whatever campus they would have normally been assigned to participate in that sport or fine art. Most of the activities STEM Academy has are offered at ECISD in some form or fashion. Our big ones are robotics, destination imagination, of course, honor society, STUCO, student council, UIL academics. So those are all activities that some of the other schools have as well," she added. David said the Destination Imagination fits right in with STEM curriculum because it's project-based learning and it's STEM-based, too. "It's really engineering and science meets theater, so it's kind of a unique combination," Davidson said. The school will still be located on the UTPB campus. "A lot of our community has asked, are we going to grow because we're now partnering with ECISD? The answer to that is we just don't have space to grow right now. We're using every single classroom, every single space available to us right now," she said. "They have not talked about putting up another portable at this time," Davidson added. STEM Academy has 775 students in kindergarten through 12. It graduated its first senior class last year and is working on its second this year. The senior class this year has 38 students, and last year's had 52 students. "Normally, kinder through 8th, we have full enrollment. But starting 9th grade on, we've had a hard time keeping full enrollment in our high school because a lot of kids have chosen to go to ECISD to do the sports and fine arts," Davidson said. She said she believes having those options available for students will give the school a boost. "I think it's going to be great for us because a lot of times when the students leave, it's a hard choice for them to make. But sports and fine arts are calling their name and they want some different opportunities. So I think this will be really great for the culture of our high school, especially," Davidson said. "For now, the school will keep a summer program for students. It is one of our goals to eventually add some of those STEM-based summer camps. We're excited about those, but that's not something that we're going to implement this school year. Our goal would be the following school year," Davidson said. She added that the academy has had many meetings with ECISD departments and staff to ease the transition. She noted that there will be some title changes to go with the change. "About 10 to 15% of their students come from Midland County," she said. "Food service will be provided by ECISD. That's actually going to be very interesting because we don't have a cafeteria here on campus. And so what ECISD is going to do is they're going to prep it and bring it over to us each morning and each afternoon for lunch. That's a lot of work, Davidson said. It should be exciting for our kids because it will be hot meals, she added. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said the district is excited to welcome almost 800 students from the STEM Academy and all their teachers, administrators, and faculty members. We look forward to really a healthy relationship with them and exploring the possibilities. When you think about a public school system and a university coming together to create opportunities for kids, the sky's the limit, Murray said. UTPB President Dr. Sandra Woodley and I have a very healthy relationship. She's been great through this process, and she and I both look forward to what could be and what will be in the future as we think about opportunities to collaborate. We're thrilled and happy to welcome them as a family, Murray said. Odessa American death notices from Saturday, April 23rd. Lawrence Dale Dancer, Odessa. Lawrence Dale Dancer, 65, died Tuesday, April 19th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Asha Deanne Nichols, West Jordan, Utah. Asha Deanne Nichols, 35, of Odessa, died Monday, April 11th in West Jordan, Utah. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. April 25th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American, Sunday, April 24th, 2022. Front page. City and county amending game room ordinances. Top cops say issues not at top of Odessa and Ector County crime list. By Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council and Ector County Commissioners are both in the process of amending their game room ordinances, but Ector County's top cops and the district attorney all say most game rooms are not any more of a law enforcement problem than most other businesses. Council members and commissioners have expressed their dismay about the explosion of game rooms over the last couple of years, saying they bring an unwanted element into neighborhoods and take money from the poor and elderly. They've also suggested many of them are engaged in illegal gambling. Records obtained from the city and the county through the Texas Public Information Act show there are currently 26 game rooms operating within city limits and 35 within unincorporated Ector County. To give an idea of the explosion, 8 game room permits were granted by Ector County authorities in 2020, and 30 were granted last year. In the city, 25 were granted last year, compared to 19 the prior year. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths and Odessa Police Department Chief Mike Gerke are convinced a certain number of the game room operators are certainly engaged in illegal gambling. In fact, Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan has filed several civil forfeiture cases based on OPD undercover operations, seizing tens of thousands of dollars from individual game rooms. However, in terms of calls for service, Griffiths and Gerke agree game rooms are not causing an increase in priority calls, calls that require a rapid response due to their violent nature. As a result, neither agency considers game rooms at the top of their priority list. Our patrol deputies knows which ones are the frequent flyers, but we don't see a lot of traffic at a majority of them, Griffiths said. Most people can go to a game room and spend the day there in peace. Game rooms aren't even in the top third on OPD's priority list, Gerke said. It's not the top 50%. When you look at what we do, we concentrate on violent crimes and things that cause that violent crime. And when you look at homicides and aggravated assaults and that sort of thing in Odessa, you really have two causes. One is narcotics, money, and, you know, crimes of passion, and that's not really something that we're seeing from game rooms, Gerke said. From April 11th, 2020 to April 11th, 2022, OPD has responded to roughly 440 calls to game rooms and the ECSO has responded to about 120 calls. Reports were only required in roughly 30% of the calls. The calls that required reports included robberies, burglaries, drugs, and stolen vehicles. The calls not requiring reports included alarms being set off, traffic stops, and officers checking out people and vehicles reported as suspicious. Traditionally, Gerke said bars have been a much bigger issue for OPD than game rooms, but also noted it all depends on who is operating the bar or the game room. Gerke and Griffiths said some game rooms account for an inordinately high percentage of the calls, but many aren't problematic at all. Of the 61 game rooms, 5 did not summon the police at all during the 2-year period studied, and several had fewer than 20 calls in that 24-month period. On the other hand, the Palace game room on East Highway 80 accounted for 16% of OPD's game room calls over that time period. OPD officers responded to the game room 72 times and took 22 reports. In a couple of instances, the reports involved people with guns. Other times, reports were filed after traffic stops were performed and suspicious people were detained. Owner Hai Nguyen referred a reporter to his son for an interview. The son's cell phone did not accept calls and he did not respond to repeated texts. Illegal gambling. While Gerke, Griffiths, and Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan are not alarmed by game room-related crime rates, they do harbor suspicions that some could be engaged in illegal gambling. They have some reason to believe so. In December 2019, March 2021, and May 2021, undercover OPD officers were provided cash instead of credits while playing at a handful of game rooms. As a result, OPD seized more than $125,000, with former district attorney Bobby Bland and Gallivan arguing the currency was contraband being used in the commission of a felony and subject to seizure and forfeiture. Recent inspections. Sonia Puccio and Armida Acosta said they have been working in the game room industry for years. Most recently, Portillo has been managing the Diamond Game Room, and Acosta has been working as a part-time employee at the Golden Star Game Room. They insist their game rooms are operated above board, and the vast majority of their clients are board senior citizens. They both feel as though the city of Odessa is unfairly targeting game rooms lately, considering how much money the city takes in via sales tax revenues and permitting fees. They also claim that over the last 2 weeks, OPD officers have been issuing citations for ordinance violations that they never considered a problem before. Acosta said the Golden Star was inspected on April 16th without a single citation being written, but she received 70 citations the very next day because the serial numbers on each of the business's 70 machines were on the side of the machine, not the upper right corner on the front. Each ticket comes with a $280 fine. The owner of the Golden Star shut down that day to rectify the issue, and the game room remained shut down, Acosta says. Portillo shut down the Diamond Game Room for 3 days once she heard about the serial number issue so she could take care of her machines, and then shut down again 4 days later after hearing some game rooms were receiving citations for not having logbooks detailing each machine's maintenance schedule. Some game rooms are feeling intimidated. I know of one game room that was visited 6 times in 1 week, Portillo said. Two other game room owners, Scott Lee and Quang Vo, acknowledged they've shut down their game rooms to address the serial number issues, but declined to comment further. Attempts to reach 23 game room owners were unsuccessful. Someone responding to a text sent to Lei Nguyen, owner of Lei Game Room, responded, "You are crazy. You want this city become dead. No entertainment." But didn't respond to further texts. Gerke acknowledged some people might believe OPD officers are conducting inspections despite being shorthanded because of the city council's current discussions about game rooms. However, he insisted OPD officers routinely perform inspections on game rooms. He also denied they were issuing citations they've never issued before. There was no directive from the city council or other than it was mentioned during city council meetings that we have issues with these businesses, Gerke said. A sergeant who works in the chief's office took it upon himself to do this. He knows the issues that are happening, but again, it's not an irregularity to do this, to be seen in those businesses. It's no different than officers doing extra patrols in a specific neighborhood because of an increase in burglaries or because of a fatal crash attributed to a speeding motorist, Gerke said. Bond early voting begins Monday. Chamber board comes out in support of both props. Early voting for the May 7th Ector County ISD bond election kicks off Monday, fresh off the news that the board of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce recently voted to endorse it. This action came after extensive presentations from ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray and Odessans for Education PAC members Lorraine Perryman and Lisa Wyman, a news release Friday detailed. We must not only prepare our students for the future job needs and demands, but we must also make sure that they are fully equipped with the proper skill sets that will be needed by our current and future employers. That requires repair and upgrades to our aging infrastructure, facilities, and technology, as well as providing a state-of-the-art career and technical education center that will provide our employers with graduates who are career-ready. After all, our students deserve the best, and as a community, we must strive for an academic setting of excellence, said Jim Cox, chair of Odessa Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. The news release continued that the high schools are exceedingly overcrowded. Our students deserve a safe, secure, and learning atmosphere every student deserves. Odessa has not built a new high school since 1959, and that does not align with the overall excellence that we feel our students, families, and employers should demand. We are decades past the need for a new high school. Our needs are great. As time goes on, the price tag to meet these needs increase. Putting off the inevitable is not going to make it any cheaper. We must act now and vote yes on both propositions. The students deserve this, our community's future demands this, and our future success depends on this, added Cox. The Chamber Board has 30 board members, elected by the membership of more than 740 companies and organizations making up more than 27,000 employees. As early voting begins Monday, voters face the 398,255,000 bond, which comes in two propositions. Proposition A, $215,255,000, which would include maintenance and life cycle repairs and replacement for school district buildings, $130,255,000. Construction of a new career and technical center, $70 million, which would include classroom and lab space for programs like welding, construction, health science, automation, and process technology, HVAC, plumbing, and others. It would include an estimated 150,000 square feet and include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Classroom technology upgrades, $15 million, also would be included. That would feature classroom and or campus audio, visual, and multimedia refresh or additions. Proposition B for $183 million would go for a new comprehensive high school at UConn and Faudry Roads. The district purchased this 100-acre site about 2 years ago for a little over $2 million. The new high school would be 6A and have a 2,500 to 2,800 student capacity. It would cover an estimated 400,000 square feet and include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. The district website said leaders anticipate the bond will create a tax rate increase of 15 cents and for a home with a taxable value of $100,000 would equate to a tax increase of approximately $12 per month. There would be no tax increase on residents' homesteads for taxpayers 65 and older, as state law dictates that the tax rate and the amount paid on a residence are frozen when that person turns 65 years old, applies for the exemption and is approved by the Ector County Appraisal District. ECISD gives local taxpayers a 20% homestead exemption, which is the maximum allowed by law.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.